It's time for Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And here is your host, Inside Towers business editor, John Celentano.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence, a quarterly market report that dives deep into the digital infrastructure ecosystem. It looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. An annual subscription also includes an exclusive briefing and online support. The 2024 Volume 1 issue is out now. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. Interesting topic today. We've all heard for a while about the supply chain delays and how these delays have slowed fiber infrastructure and wireless network deployments. Telecom equipment distributors play a pivotal role in supplying all the infrastructure elements that make broadband and mobile networks work. Distributors stock their warehouses with thousands of products from hundreds of manufacturers and deliver on orders for these products from network operators and their contractors to wherever the equipment is needed in the field. PowerIntel is one such equipment distributor. Here to talk about PowerIntel's important role in the telecom supply chain and how that role is evolving are Melissa Sebring, Director of Marketing, and Gus Vasilikas, Vice President of Global Business Development and Vice President for PowerIntel's Canadian Operations. Melissa and Gus, welcome to Tower Talks.
Thank you for having us, John.
Good to have you here. Melissa, maybe you can give us a little background on PowerIntel. And I know it's been in the business for a while, and the name is quite familiar, but give us the overview of the company.
Sure. So we have been in business for 60 plus years, and we are a wholesale distributor of telecommunications equipment. We enable connectivity from the foundational basics to the most ancillary product lines.
And I talked about the role of distributors, but where do you play in the telecom equipment supply ecosystem? Are you focused on a particular aspect of the business, or do you cover all products?
All products. We are a one-stop shop for anybody building a network.
Okay, very good. And what are your primary product lines? I imagine you have hardware, you have electronics, but are you primarily on the wireline side or the wireless side or across the board?
All of the above. So from A to Z, we cover it all.
Okay, very good. So Gus, you have a good perspective on the overall telecom business. How do you see the demand evolving over the next few months?
So I think right now we're sitting in a situation where it's probably one of the lower troughs, right? If we look at the total demand on supply and construction over the last 4 years, 5 years, even including some of the COVID times, during COVID, there was a high demand on products because so many people were working from home, learning from home, having to do telemedicine and obviously entertainment. There were high demands on companies like PowerIntel, where it really it caught up with it. Then we ran into the shortage of product. And then the distributor became incredibly important because we had inventory when the manufacturers had already depleted. And we were working with our customers to get them the proper product at the right time so that they could continue building, whether it was outside plant or electronics. And I think just right now, probably from October through February has been, I think industry-wide, has been a little bit of a lower trough, right? A lot of anticipation of spending on BEAD money coming up. So there's other federal programs that are out there for tribal infrastructures or some of the legacy programs like RDOF.
Right.
But those products and those projects are starting to temper down a little bit. And clearly through the winter season, outside plant, abundance of supply, but very little labor to install the projects.
Right.
And very little confidence to continue building because the telecom companies are having to watch their capital.
There was a point in time when a lot of the operators stocked up on inventory, anticipating delays, because of the high demand. Is that burning off now, or are you seeing that those inventories deplete, so they're now starting to buy more through the supply chain, or is it still pretty slow?
I think it's a guarded watch, right? Everybody's looking at the marketplace, and our customers, our key customers, are coming to us with good indication, right? It starts with the quotations. It comes with the interest in product planning, both with the manufacturers and with the distributor. So all those things are starting to pick up and get good activity. I think industry wide, I would agree with an analyst perspective that says about half of their stockpiled inventory has been burned through, which means that we're still several weeks or months away from starting to see large demands coming back to people such as distributors who are supposed to be stockpiling, right? And holding to fulfill demand.
Yeah, I think your description that we're in a bit of a trough here is probably appropriate. You know, it's not we dropped off rather quickly, but it's slowly coming back up, right? So,
And I think it was really because in the tail end of 2022 going into 23, there was a lot of backlog, right?
Yeah.
And people had overbought, you know, and even distributors had overcommitted and took all this inbound. So you have a customer who has inventory plus a distributor that's fully loaded, means that it's taking a little while for this effect to work its way through.
Are you starting, you mentioned RFQs for, I guess, some of these BEAD project and other government funding projects. Are you actually starting to see order flow yet, or is that still to come?
We're pretty far away from order flow. Again, the latest information that we've all read from the NTIA is that order flow is probably not going to start until the third quarter, possibly even the fourth quarter, that these programs will be approved. However, there are inquiries, right? A lot of consulting engineering firms are coming out saying, hypothetically, can you supply this mileage of fiber into this market? And they'll need so many splices, pedestals, pole attachment product, both, you know, burial or aerial deployments.
Are you seeing the same kind of response from the wireless side, or is it primarily, wireline or fiber infrastructure that you're getting these inquiries from?
Fiber comes into play. If we talk about fiber for just a moment, the fiber portion of backhaul, even for wireless, is the same as a fiber broadband. But we are starting to see the inquiry of people, exploring building out wireless. And, you know, wireless brings a couple of things. It does bring a rapid deployment. So even fiber-based infrastructure companies are considering where and how to use wireless. Maybe in a market where they have less than 5 households passed per mile. It's hard to justify the economics for fiber in that case when you can buy today wireless electronics point to point that and point to multipoint that actually will provide an adequate, close to gigabit service into the household. And if it's engineered correctly, then it's not susceptible to severe weather and things like that that historically was plaguing, wireless or satellite-based systems. So I think we're seeing it from twofold. Power Intel is also taking a more serious approach of looking at the wireless marketplaces, the WISPs, or hybrid deployments, again, where it's a fiber-based company that says, well, I want to do wireless for this inner city area or this town, this village, this large enterprise campus, such as a university or a hospital campus.
You carry these point-to-multipoint systems that the WISPs use?
Yes. We just started. We've added a couple of product lines. Most recently, the Tirana products, Cambium and Mimosa are the major wireless platforms. And those complement then our wired and our PON technology platforms.
Yeah, it's interesting how these products have evolved. Now we're talking, you know, close to gigabit speeds on downloads, and mm-hmm. you know, versus what we were getting before you got what you got. But now it's really come along, and I think to your point, it fills that gap in that last mm-hmm. mile where fiber may not be appropriate or economic or too long to deploy, something like that.
You know, sometimes we're the latest customers that we've helped have talked about just using wireless even for a temporary basis as they're working through permitting. Again, the unlicensed mm-hmm. radio spectrum
yep.
allows them to get permission to stand up on one pole, let's say, get yep. fiber to that pole so they have a good single gig, 10 gig, maybe even 100 gig connectivity to that point, and then support 10, 20, 30 houses from there to be deployed in days. Sometimes yeah. permitting is taking now months to get the proper permits for pole attachments or for conduit right-of-ways and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, you know, distributors typically have a warehouse full of products, but most distributors that I'm familiar with also provide a lot of services support to their customers. And give us a little rundown on, you know, how you support your customers when they give you a pallet load of orders.
Yeah. So we absolutely can do that for our customers, and we can manage inventory and logistics for them as well. Mm-hmm. So that lets them stay focused on providing their services and us being, you know, a leader in the supply chain issues, and lets us do that for them. So that's definitely one of the services that we provide for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, with, I think, Gus, when we spoke earlier, you talked about some of the capabilities or features and function you can provide as support to your customers to help them achieve faster deployment of fiber in particular, mm-hmm. where maybe you could talk about that for a minute, like how can you speed up the deployments through various processes or mm-hmm. Techniques?
So there's a couple of things that we do. First, as Melissa mentioned, our supply chain and logistics, right? To kit things and to bring products on site together that you need. Because honestly, if you show up with the fiber and you don't have the handholds or the pedestals mm-hmm. or the pole attachment hardware, you're not going to go far, right, on that deployment. You're still waiting. So one of the things we do from a logistics is that to work with mostly consulting engineering firms. Again, the tier two, tier three market space, there are some customers who have large project management capabilities. They have large scale deployments and their procurement mm-hmm. Teams do this, but sometimes they'll bring in a consulting engineering firm, right?
Yeah.
And the consulting engineering firm will tell us then, okay, we're looking for this type of material to be on or about this date. And then every 10, 15, 20 days down the road, we need another pallet or another, you know, refreshment mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. these consumables. That's one way that we're helping. And the second is really to help people make decisions. You know, technology has evolved such that there is some commoditization. Everybody has a brand preference. But the advantage yep. of working with a Power and Tell type distributor, where we have access to hundreds of brands and we mm-hmm. have thousands of product in stock and ready to ship in multiple warehouses across the United mm-hmm. States, mm-hmm. we know the quality and integrity of manufacturers and can confidently say these two or three products are really functional equivalent. So, Mr. Customer, I know that your brand preference is this, and I have 1,000 of those, but you need 1,300. I have 300 of these other, and mm-hmm. these other devices are, you know, equal, right? They're equal in quality and volume. Here's the price point on or about the same. And therefore, the customer continues to deploy. One of the things that we say at this point is that the consumer of broadband pays for a reliable service. They don't pay more just because they know, oh, this has this brand product
right.
In the backbone. It's based on this electronics or these optical fibers and such. Yes, there's quality. Yes, there's integrity behind it. But there is a degree of commoditization.
Mm-hmm.
And in a strong distributorships such as PowerIntel, we help customers make those decisions as they mm-hmm. need to.
Kitting is a big part of that too, right? Where you
it
put
is.
Together, like you said, you don't ship just the fiber, you have all the pieces to go with it, and mm-hmm. You're able to deliver a complete package for a deployment, right? Yeah.
For years, you know, I worked with the manufacturers, and it wasn't until I got to distributorship to understand equally important to splicing closures or fiber optic SFPs and such is bug spray and gloves.
How about that?
And tools, because
exactly.
if you don't have those items, you're not going to deploy. You're really not going to get that deployment out any faster.
Exactly.
minus these other life necessities, as they say.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. I've worked in the supply chain myself with another distributor, and I was always surprised, you know, when they said, well, you know, we need to throw in this in the kit just in case, you know.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Very good. Do you see the market in Canada kind of mirroring what's going on in the U.S., or is that you treat that as a distinct market with its own drivers and elements?
We do treat it distinctly. There are so many similarities, right? You could say the product and the strategy is identical.
Yeah.
The North American continent deployment and use of fiber, the blend of aerial and burial and all the products that go with it is I would say equivalent between the US and Canada. What is different is the funding, right? The Canadian markets have their own funding models, the government mm-hmm. funding model. Mm-hmm. But it's a much smaller percentage of money, you know, in the overall spend, it is a much smaller portion. And there are a lot of large telecommunication providers, and the regionals are really district, meaning that it's not a multi-state, you know, the provinces of Canada are so large that mm-hmm. you might get a provider who is the alternate broadband provider for one city, maybe two cities, because it's 100 miles or so difference between.
Sure.
So it there's no economies of scale for them to try to attach and extend their infrastructure.
Interesting. Do you get to travel up there often?
Yeah, I since I've joined the organization, I've had a couple of invites, and you know, it does it's a journey sometimes to get up.
That's it. Yeah. Well, look, this is good. Just as we wrap up, maybe you could, I'll ask each of you, you know, what do you see as the outlook for PowerIntel in the coming months? Melissa, I mean, you're looking out ahead and growing the business. We talked about some of the market drivers and the government programs and the like, but from your perspective, how do you see things unfolding in the next few months through into the year?
Yeah, I think that with some of this funding coming on board, we're definitely going to ramp up. I think we'll find ourselves in some supply chain challenges again in this industry.
Yeah.
But I do think that some preparation on everybody's end can definitely ease what we've learned in the past. So we're looking forward to that. And hopefully we can get some of the builds prepared with this government funding to help us get broadband to underserved areas.
Awesome. Gus, what do you see from your vantage point?
Yeah, I think that I think we're in a very strong position. You know, we've been able to bring on some very very strong American-made marquee companies mm-hmm. like Ciena. Mm-hmm. We mm-hmm. added Ciena's infrastructure. Of course, we've been partnered with Adtran for many years.
Right.
And then some, you know, rising star. There are a lot of niche players that are coming to complete those solutions, right? So that we can get from a core routing, like with a Juniper technology and such, and go all the way out through optical transport and then delivering it to the home. I think we've built a very good ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that as funding comes available, and with, you know, the marketing efforts that Melissa's put through, the shows that we have, the social media presence to
right.
let people know we're here.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a very competent sales organization, and that sales organization is constantly going out and looking for those opportunities. I do believe that distribution will do well in the growth as the money starts to come out. But right now it's one of those we're in the waiting, right?
Sure.
We're preparing for it, and we're doing a lot of education and confidence building with the customers to establish relationship. But there's not a lot of shipment taking place at this time.
It sounds like you're pretty well positioned to meet these Build America, Buy America requirements. I think sounds as though you have in your catalog a lot of companies that would comply with that. Is that right?
Yeah. So that's been a whole challenge, right? The push for Buy America, Build America. And I think the one thing that happened in this motion, while it's a very strong and noble sense for an American company to buy an American product and to create American jobs, as we're doing such a transformational infrastructure build, the challenge is the cost, right? I don't think that everybody understood that when it's gone as deep as it is, meaning that the waiver for fiber is very small. Fiber must all be produced in America. So the large fiber manufacturers stepped up to the plate to do that. Unfortunately, there's a higher cost if they are to solely produce that product with 100%, U.S.-made materials in a U.S. factory. That does drive the cost. It drives the cost for the smallest plastic parts, and it drives the cost for fiber. Electronics, the same thing. Waivers only allow you to buy a product and put it into an electronic, which is not available anywhere in the U.S., not at any volume. So there are some exceptions, but again, the assembly and such, and so there could be, reading and talking to people, the ability to deploy could be 20% less with the same money, because the product could be 15 to 20% more expensive. And so it does create the jobs and has all the positive things. But the one thing that wasn't taken into account is that Buy America, Build America strategy is actually raising the cost of goods. And, as a distributor, the customers are pushing back saying, well, why is that price higher? And they're shopping it and reshopping it. So that actually puts a little bit of a squeeze, a tighter compression on the distributor, but we don't manufacture. We're compliant, pass through and support our customers, but and we'll source for them whatever product they select. But some of these BABA compliant components are coming at a higher cost.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, look, this has been very good. I appreciate the conversation. Melissa, how can interested parties get and find out more about your products and services?
Sure. So anyone can stay connected with us on any social media platforms, such as LinkedIn, Twitter, or X, or Facebook, Instagram, and also ptsupply.com, where we're available 24/7.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you both for an interesting discussion.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for having us, John.
And thanks, everyone, for sitting in with us. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.